Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
We have two very special guests now on Open House, and they're raising one of the biggest and most challenging issues that Australians are facing now and in the future. It will be much more so. As our population continues to age in growing numbers and medical technology continues its breathtaking advances, the decisions taken in intensive care units by doctors and family members of patients will be tougher and tougher. And after we speak with our guests, I'd love to hear your views or experiences with this very vexing issue, 1300 40 2020, or post on our Open House Community Facebook page. It's a question powerfully confronted in the latest play from Australia's most famous and prolific playwright, David Williamson, At Any Cost. It was co-written with the Professor of Surgery at Sydney University, Dr. Mohamed Kadra. And they're both with us on Open House. David on the phone and Mohamed in the studio. It's great to have you both with us.
Thank you.
David, can I begin with you and get you to recount your first encounter with Mohamed and what you thought of him then?
No, he's listening. He might be embarrassed.
I think he knows.
Well, it was at the Brisbane Writers' Festival. I was there as a husband to my wife, Kristen, who was speaking at it, and a gentleman approached me and said, you're David Williamson, we've got to write a play together. And look, my first reaction was, well, here's another nutter. I get them quite often that
yes.
Tell me they've got a great play. But he said, he saw the look on my face and he raced into the bookstore, raced out with two of his books, forgetting to pay for them, or he claims he was going to go back and pay for them, but the shopkeeper chased him out. So it was rather a chaotic first meeting. But he said, read these books, and if they interest you, get back to me, and we can talk about it. Well, they did. I read them both. I thought they were terrific. A very strong and powerful analysis of our health system and the problems it was facing.
Mohamed, what was driving you to be so bold to approach David Williamson and also tell us how you heard that David was willing to run with the idea?
Well, I just always feel that you've got to follow your feelings. There are times when you get overwhelming sense that this is the right thing to do. And he looked like a kindly gentleman. He didn't look like he was going to reject me too much. And I thought, well, at the very least, you've got to ask the question. If the answer's no, you've lost nothing. After David read, I just put my phone number in the front of the books. And about 6 weeks later, I was at Penrith Hospital here in Sydney operating. In fact, I was doing a nephrectomy, taking out a kidney. And the phone rang and my intern answered it and said, there's somebody called David Williamson on the phone. I said, look, I think I know who that is. So with one shoulder perched, you know, the phone perched on my shoulder.
And the kidney in the other hand.
And the kidney in the other hand, I spoke to David and we made a time to speak to each other. And I was so excited that he would agree to do this project.
Tell us briefly the message of the books that you gave him.
Look, the books themselves are about compassion in our health system predominantly, but they also analyse the stories of people confronting their own mortality. Patients that I've seen that are trying to grasp this nettle of ill health or even cancer or something that they know is going to shorten their lives. And it's at that time that people are at their weakest.
Yes. Can I get you both to briefly tell the story of the play At Any Cost? Perhaps, David, if you could deal with the family at the centre of it, tell us their story, and Mohamed, the intensive care doctor, who kind of narrates us through the issues at the heart of the play. First to you, David.
Well, Mohamed gave me the a variety of possible medical scenarios to use, and one really appealed to me, and that was the one where the husband is a very loving husband in love with his wife. She had a stroke 4 years before.
They're both very elderly.
They're both elderly. The wife's 82, he's 80 or so. And she had a stroke, is very badly incapacitated, and he cares for her. She has some communication with him, nodding the head and smiling, so he knows she's hearing. what he does, but she has no real quality of life. Then she gets I think, Mohammed, it's an acute kidney infection.
That's correct, yeah.
And has to be quickly whisked off to hospital, and the rest of the play is virtually the family coming together, three children and father, to decide when the treatment should cease, when the patient should be taken off the life support, or if she should.
Yes, there's a great deal of division in the family, and it also brings up issues of their past as well.
Well, Mohammed told me that's what interested me, really. Well, a medical question interested me too, but what interested me, he said, look, all the family baggage tends to come out at times like this. It's really high-stress time. There'll be differences between the siblings about what should happen to mother, the siblings and the father, and there'll be issues in the background, like who was the most loved child and who got the most attention and who did the most for us, and all of that comes out. And I thought, well, this is drama. So my task, in a sense, was to create a sense of how difficult it is for families to make this decision and how carefully the doctor has to tread. And Mohammed told me that ideally the doctor and the family agree, and I'll let him elaborate on that one.
Yes. So there is this doctor, this intensive care specialist, who narrates us through the issues. So, Mohammed, tell us from his perspective what this play's about.
So from a doctor's perspective, and from Ali Sharif, who is the doctor, there's a number of issues. Firstly, he's of non-Australian background, and so there are these issues of the multicultural doctor. He's of a different belief system to Des, who's a Christian at heart, whereas Ali is a Muslim. And then there are the whole plethora of costs, of politics, of guiding the family through a problem that you know is probably one of the top one or two things they'll face in their life, really. Yes. And the vast amount of conflict between family members, old baggage, which, close your ears, David, but was, you know, the genius of David Williamson putting that together. Yes. In a way that there isn't a doctor that goes to see this play who's talked to me that doesn't say, you've just held a mirror up to our life. And it is very, very realistic in its portrayal.
There's one very revealing and confronting, and I found it surprising, part of the play, where the intensive care doctor reveals the proportion of the nation's health budget that's taken up by those in the final 6 months and the final month of their lives. Can you take us through those figures?
Yeah, so the best estimates are that something like three quarters, about 70% of the health budget, is spent on patients in the last 6 months of life, about 42% on patients in the last month of life.
I found that so surprising.
It is, and when you think that the health industry, the health system, is at a stage now where, for example, we're in New South Wales now, the entire state budget will be consumed by paying for healthcare by about 2020, according to Kevin Rudd's National Health and Reforms. That is no money for schools, for roads, for anything else. So there is a real sense of the whole community has to grapple with this issue of rising costs. More importantly, I think, Lee, and this is what David understood when he first read the stories and was able to put together in at any cost, it's the human dimension of, is this the type of health system we actually want?
Yes. It's a very big question. David, you actually spent a day in intensive care for an up-close and personal insight into all of this. What was that like for you? How did you find that?
Well, it's sobering. There's this very large ward full of people who are dying or being kept alive by very sophisticated equipment. And I think you need to be a very special sort of person to be an ICU specialist, because there are highs, as Mohammed says, through his doctor. Sometimes you can bring a person back to life, and that's a high, but there's a sense of the end of things all around you.
Did it compel you more to write the play when you went there?
Well, yeah, yes, it was sort of like the last staging post of life, and it was. But this is not to say that the play is as grim as an ICU unit, as Mohammed said, and as I strived for. When families are in deep conflict, a lot of black humour emerges as well.
Yes.
When the family secrets come tumbling out. So the audiences are not in for a dire night of,
oh, no.
of death and dying, but they are forced to face the reality of when is the right time to do it, how would they cope, and how is society going to cope?
Yes, it's a powerful question. We're with playwright David Williamson and surgeon Mohammed Kadra on Open House. Mohammed, I think it's vital to make this point that you're not advocating euthanasia with this play.
No, I'm fundamentally of the belief that people need to have choice, and one of the choices is no treatment, or treatment to make someone comfortable and allow nature to take its course. I remember, you know, a deeply Christian Air Commodore I had as a patient in Canberra. And we were able to, he had very advanced bladder cancer, but with experimental chemotherapy and radical surgery, etc., maybe he could have made some survival. Perhaps we could have added a month or two or six to his life. And he just, you know, called his family reverend that he followed, said his prayers, brought his family around him and said, you know, I really don't want this. This is not for me. And I think there's a vast difference between that and injecting somebody with lots of drugs to terminate their life before they're ready to die.
So what are you wanting people to think about or talk through as they leave the play?
It's been heartening for both David and I to see and hear the type of conversations, and that is that I want people, when they come out of this play, to turn to somebody they love and say, if I was in this situation, this is what I would like done. These are my wishes. My wife and I have done that, you know, and I've said to her, if I'm in that situation, I never want you to turn me off. I want, you know, lots of chemotherapy. Never assume I'm dead, I say to her, but she wants the reverse.
At least you know, you've talked about it.
Absolutely. Yes. And there is such a thing as an advanced care directive, which is a piece of paper that, like a living will, a person writes down their wishes for those events, for that particular circumstance.
But here's the critical question. What benchmarks are you going to set by which you make these decisions? Because there are so many variables. Families are, as we've often observed, under great stress. What is the measure or what's the form of words about someone's condition that you're going to offer families in advice at this critical time?
Well, I think it's about doctors really starting to acknowledge the fact that the purpose of medicine is to alleviate suffering, not necessarily to elongate life, and it's certainly not to shorten life. So it really is about alleviating suffering. So when I see somebody who has a very reversible illness, it's treatable, the pros outweigh the cons, it's my duty as a doctor to lay out those facts, just as it's my duty to lay out the reverse facts where the odds are very much against him and it's really just about experimental and radical decisions that are not necessarily in the patient's best interest.
Yes. David, what are you hoping the audiences take out of the play?
Well, I can only echo Mohammed's point of view there that hopefully, well, at one level, they'll come out thinking what complex and strange beasts families are,
yes.
Which they are.
Which wasn't new to you.
No, it wasn't new to me, but the bonds that and the antagonisms, the loves and the hates, it's always fascinating to me. But the second point that Mohammed made, that people could save their loved ones a lot of anxiety and agony by knowing what those loved ones would like done.
I think this is such a timely question. Only recently I read this from the respected Fairfax columnist Elizabeth Farrelly. She writes, "Like it or not, the time is nigh when we'll have to choose not just who needs treatment, but who deserves it. Our health system will force behavioural change. You think the carbon tax is big, you ain't seeing nothing yet." Mohammed?
I think that's right. I think the rising costs, the incredible change in the purpose of health, of the health system, to become all about elongation of life as opposed to providing real care, alleviating suffering, and perhaps concentrating at that primary prevention area, getting people fitter, getting people to eat better, getting people to stop smoking.
Yes. I find it interesting that you've both had quite serious life-changing medical experiences of your own in recent years. Mohammed, you've had cancer. David, you retired briefly in 2005 with a heart condition. What were those experiences like for you facing your own mortality, and how did they help you reflect on the issues raised in this play? David?
Yes, well, I hadn't realised until recently, a very recent test, I did a very sophisticated test, found a whole dead patch on my heart.
Wow.
I realised that that what I'd thought was heart rhythm problems was caused by an actual heart attack back then. I just thought it was an excruciating night of intense indigestion. But it did trigger recurrent heart rhythm problems, which seemed to be stress-related. And I thought, I've had enough of this. But gradually the heart has recovered strength, and I exercise now. And as Herman said, lead a healthy lifestyle. So I feel like I've been reborn and given another chance to write plays.
But it does raise the issue of and confront you with your own mortality.
Yes, it does. Luckily, I got through this one, but Mohammed had a very big scare too.
So what's that like as a doctor? It's one thing to deal with it somewhat removed in the lives of your patients, albeit compassionately, but when it hits home, what's that like?
Look, it was almost surreal. I remember one morning waking up not being able to do the top button of my shirt, and there was a lump in my neck. And I got my wife, who's also a doctor, Michelle, to examine me. And she said, "Oh, gee, there's a lump in the neck. You'd better, you know, get that seen to." And then our overwhelming issue was really who's going to pick up the kids and, you know, all of that sort of stuff. 2 weeks later, I was lying in a bed where 2 weeks earlier I'd actually resuscitated somebody from a cardiac arrest. And there I was in the oncology department, looking out at patients who were on chemo, etc., and are just recovering from surgery and having radioiodine and all sorts of lovely experiences that, yes, I wouldn't want to wish on anybody. But I remember at the time feeling, you know, I really need compassion, but it's not the doctor necessarily that I'm so desperate for compassion from. It's actually the system. I was eating breakfast and I hadn't slept for a couple of days. I had a migraine. I was feeling nauseated, but I needed to eat. And they brought me some mints on a cardboard plate on a green tray, green plastic tray. And I started eating that and realized there was a whole green bit in the bottom of the plate. And what had happened, I'd eaten through the plate as well. So I'd eaten the mints and the cardboard, and there was no difference in taste.
Oh.
And it suddenly struck me that if we really want compassion in our health system, it starts with the food we give, the way the maintenance person treats you, the way the nurses treat you, the way the admissions people at the front treat you. And all of those go together to make a compassionate health system. And it's also about, you know, one of my professors of surgery when I was young used to say, a good surgeon knows when to operate. A great surgeon knows when not to operate. Mm. And that in itself is compassion.
David, without being morbid about it, if you ever make it to intensive care in this kind of circumstance, has this experience of writing the play and working through these issues changed what you'll think then or what you would say to your family now about that time?
No, if there was no possibility of a return to a life with some quality, I would want my family not to prolong it.
And Mohammed, I guess you've made your mind up a long time ago.
Yes, very, very much.
So what have you said to them? about that moment or about that time?
We talk often, and I must say it sounds macabre, but my 15 and 16-year-old boys, for example, know how I want my funeral conducted. Now, death is just a part of life, as is a 21st birthday or a driving lessons or going to school. And so when we take away that mystique of death being this incredibly terminal thing to perhaps death being a passage to something else, then it removes from it that fear that this is it. And I think it's this adherence to perhaps a more materialistic existential type of philosophies that perhaps has made us want to elongate life as opposed to just alleviate suffering.
Mohammed Khadra and David Williamson, I'm so glad you've joined us on Open House. They're very big and deep issues. Thanks for sharing them with us tonight.
Thank you, Lee.
Thanks very much, Lee.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.